This is going to be an adventure. The only reason my name appears on this talk at all is because I'm presenting it. This really is largely is. Well, actually. Well, I wrote the abstract too. But actually, if you really want to know, this is sort of divided between scientists and data processing people. But this is really the work of Alan Lambert, Lucien Fordereau, and Michael Schwartz, primarily with some help from Nathaniel Livesey. But the MLS team really wanted to introduce this audience to the plans that we have for doing near real-time processing of or MLS data for the purpose of use in data assimilation. And since I was coming to this workshop, it seemed like a good opportunity. So we're taking a couple steps back here and talking about how we get to the inputs that you guys use, or some of the inputs that you guys use in your models. Okay, how do I change slides here? Okay, so the first three or four slides here are going to be totally preaching to the choir, because this is a little more of a general audience sort of talk, I guess. In fact, the first slide here is just sort of summarizing what data assimilation is. That is, it gives us an estimate of the state of the atmosphere at a given time from combining measurements and models, basically, to do that. Making the point that in the process of this, we get an estimate of the biases between the model and observations. We've already seen this morning, this can be used as a validation tool, you know, as well as for helping to improve the estimate to the bias for the purposes of improving data assimilation. And also making the point, as Richard Menard made very nicely this morning, of sort of the difference between the two sort of traditional ways that assimilation has been done, that is in the full numerical weather prediction model, where you generally have had to include very simplified photochemistry, but you have the advantage of it being interactive with the radiation, as opposed to the offline chemical transport model, which usually uses more detailed chemistry schemes, but doesn't allow you that interaction. And as we've seen, people here are already working towards combining these two in a way that's feasible. And this, again, is totally preaching to the choir. Why do we want to assimilate something like MLS data, and particularly the limb-sounding data as opposed to the nadir sounders and so forth? Of course, if we are assimilating ozone, we're going to see improvements in the analyzed ozone fields. We're going to see improvements in the radiation and heating fields that interact with that. It can lead to improvements in air quality prediction, to a better estimate of tropospheric ozone, more accurate regional and global forecast. Through the chemistry code in the models, it can provide constraints for unobserved constituents. It could provide a better description of stratospheric dynamics, both through improving the heating rates and through the through improvements in the wind fields that you get from the tracer observations. We already heard about a lot of this morning. And also planning and support of large campaigns. For instance, the assimilations, the GEOS assimilations were used in forecasting and doing quick analyses for the SOLVE campaigns, and some of the European ones have been used in the DCO campaigns. Some of the ozone assimilations that KMI does have been used in conjunction with the campaigns. If we can assimilate something like MLS data in near real time, then we can improve that kind of support function. Again, continuing this motivation for that assimilation, another point is that a lot of the radiance data that the assimilation systems use to to retrieve the temperature, a lot of the channels are sensitive to ozone. So if we have a better ozone field, we can allow the assimilation models to more effectively use those fields. And again, improve the temperature analyses, improve the wind analyses, as we've heard a couple talks about this morning, by improvements in the tracer fields. There's been quite a lot of interest from some of the centers in getting a near real-time data stream from OLMOS. Our current retrievals give us something with inherently a several-day latency, which I'll explain in more detail why that is later on. So we've been talking with several people here, Carl Hoppel at MRL, NRL, and the other people doing those assimilations, the people at Gmail, Stephen Possen and Ivanka Steiner, Craig Long at NOAA, David Jackson, his group at the UK Met Office, and people at the University of Edinburgh who are collaborating with ECMWF. We've been talking to a lot of the groups that do assimilation. There's been a lot of interest in near-FM assimilation, particularly of ozone and temperature from MLS. So we have some seed money from this JCSDA, Joint Center for Satellite Data Assimilation, to try to feel out what we can do in the way of near real-time processing for the MLS data. Of course, the obvious goals are to provide something with the appropriate accuracy, precision, and vertical resolution. That is, we need a useful ozone product with the uncertainties specified and so forth, and a low latency with realistic processing requirements. This is fairly obvious. So the current operational processing is version 2.2. It's averted using an optical estimation retrieval. It's very demanding of computational resources. It takes on the order of a day to process a day of data. And there's an inherent latency of several days, which is mainly one because of the large processing requirements to go through the several levels of processing. But another big one is basically waiting for some of the inputs. We use the GEOS-5 analyses temperatures for a temperature a priori, and there's inherent latency on that is 1 to 2 days typically. There's also the ephemeris and orbit attitude information that we use in the retrievals, and there's a latency of on the order of a day or two on that. So there are inherent latencies in waiting for the inputs of the system, and the data is also actually go into a little bit of this more later on. The data is actually given to us in 24-hour chunks, so that actually adds to the latency. This is the name of the little project that we have some seed money for and are kind of exploring this with. And so what we're doing so far is using a fast linearized forward model. This is opposed to the full non-linear radio transfer calculation to get the state of the atmosphere. That's used in the retrieval process. Maybe we go into this a little more. Okay, I'll actually go into that some in more detail a little later on. But right at the moment, I'm just showing an example of what we've done so far in retrieving ozone in near real time. MLS measures ozone in several different bands, and in the full retrieval system, we do a retrieval in each one of those bands, along with simultaneous retrieval of a number of other species and temperature. So there's a whole bunch of different phases to the standard retrievals. So basically, in order to start this, they did some exploration of which of the microwave radiometers is best to use for a sort of standalone or almost standalone near real time retrieval of ozone. The standard product that you put out, if you just get a file that's called ozone from MLS, it will be the ozone retrieved from the 240 gigahertz radiometer. And in fact, for the preliminary tests that we've done, we are using that same radiometer. We are using some different channels from that radiometer, and we're retrieving, the only things that are retrieved with it are nitric acid and SO2, and the reason for those being that there's lines that lie, you know, right essentially on top on the sides of the ozone line there from those species. So there's the interfering species, I guess would be the term for it. Whereas when we retrieve it from this radiometer, in the standard retrieval, we're retrieving a whole slew of other constituents plus temperature at the same time. A linear forward model and a 1D homogeneous line of sight, meaning that you just assume that as the instrument scans down through the atmosphere that it's measuring at the same point all the time, rather than doing a series of retrievals to get the change in location information. And here are just some examples from a test case that we did for one day. It's the 28th of January 2005. What we're showing here are a couple of levels in the lowermost stratosphere, 100 millibars, 147 millibars. And on the top are our standard version 2.2 ozone retrievals. And on the bottom are this QuickO3, this very first attempt, very simplistic attempt at doing a near real-time assimilation. And as you can see, at 100 millibars, we're seeing fairly good agreement over most of the globe, a little bit larger differences in the tropics, and in a few rather disturbed conditions in the northern hemisphere winter there. This is actually a case, in fact, it may be near the time of one that's previously shown, a case where there's a large intrusion into the lower stratospheric vortex there. And as you go down further, of course, the retrieval becomes much more nonlinear the further you go down. And so as you go down further, you start to see some significant problems in this very first initial test. If you go up to the upper stratosphere now, 3.2 and 0.3 millibars, so this is really sort of stratopause level. And actually, you see pretty good agreement, but again, you can see some differences, particularly in the tropics at 3 millibars. But they look to be doing fairly nicely. And if you look at the levels in between in the middle stratosphere, and you'll be able to see this from the next plot, but they do actually even better in the middle stratosphere, which is what we show here just kind of as a global average. The dashed line is the standard retrieval, and the solid line is the near real-time retrieval. And so you can see that from about 60 millibars, 60, 70 millibars, all the way up to maybe 3 millibars, even sometimes 1 millibar, depending on what latitude band you look in, We're seeing very similar results in the abbot. And, of course, they diverge very strongly as you go up into the mesosphere and as you go down into the upper troposphere where the retrieval becomes very nonlinear. This is just a plot of the theoretical precision for each of those measurements. And the reason you actually see the main reason that you see what looks like better precision in the quick ozone retrieval, which kind of doesn't compute, it's not intuitive. The main reason you see that actually is pretty intuitive is because we're not retrieving temperature. And so you can't propagate the uncertainties in the temperature through the ozone retrieval. So you're not propagating essentially you're not propagating the uncertainties correctly in the temperature field that you're using. So that would be a warning you'd have to give to the user, and something you'd have to figure out how to deal with in this kind of a retrieval. So just to summarize, what we've done so far in trying to test a near real time ozone product, the quick retrievals that we've done so far with a linear forward model are looking promising. They're within 5 to 10% of the standard product in most of the stratosphere and the lower mesosphere. We need some improvements to be viable globally at 150 and 215 millibars, and I'll say a few words about that a bit later. Basically, the linearized forward model is becoming a serious problem there.
How much do you trust the regular retrieval?
It is recommended for use, and it has been characterized and validated. There's a paper that's I think it's been accepted, I'm not absolutely sure, for the aura validation issue that includes let me just say, I can't tell you in detail, give you numbers how much we trust it, but I can tell you that we know how much we trust it because we've done an extensive validation on it. Okay, and then just something we've done even less work on is a very preliminary temperature retrieval, and this is just doing a single retrieval from a few channels. Now, in the standard processing, there's actually a whole bunch of temperature retrievals because every phase where we retrieve things from different radiometers, we also retrieve temperature at the same time. And then the standard product is something that we sort of assess to be sort of the best combination of those products. So anyway, we're just using a few bands. We're just retrieving temperature, tangent height, and geopotential height, which all go together. And using the same linear forward model, homogeneous line of sight, we are not using the narrowband digital autocorrelator spectrometer, which is something that helps us get better temperatures in the mesosphere. And because we don't have the polarized forward model that's used to account for the Zeeman splitting and so forth, in the mesosphere, we really can't do much. So the top retrieval height's limited to the lower mesosphere in this particular case. Now, these are kind of complicated, and I don't totally understand them, but the important thing to note is the red line is the standard version 2.2 temperature retrieval. This is what we consider our best temperature retrieval and the one that's been validated. The cyan line is the near real-time temperature retrieval. Now the green line is the a priori that we use for the near real-time retrieval. And that's, if you recall, for the standard product we use DOS-5 analyses for an a priori. For the near real-time retrieval it's a climatology. The red line versus the cyan line is the comparison between the standard retrieval and the quick retrieval. And we basically see pretty fair agreement up to about 1 millibars. Log pressure always gets me. But up to about 1 millibar. And then in the lower mesosphere, the NRT retrieval gets quite bad, and in the upper mesosphere it simply collapses to the climatology. The next page shows the scatter and the precision from the two retrievals. Again, the standard retrieval is the red, the NRT retrieval is the cyan. Again, the point to take away here is there's a little bit more scatter in the NRT retrievals in the stratosphere. They basically go to climatology in the mesosphere, which is why the scatter gets small. There's quite a bit of scatter in the polar regions, and especially in the northern hemisphere. And recall, this is northern winter in the lower stratosphere. And basically, this is because you have very strong line-of-sight temperature gradients. And so using those assumptions of the 1D homogeneous line of sight is giving you some problems in those regions. This is just to sort of gives you more of an overview as a function of latitude of the near real time minus MLS version 2.2, and this the variation in it sort of highlights the areas where you shall see significant differences. So just more of a 3D overview of what those differences look like. So to summarize what we've done so far with the NRT temperatures, in most of the stratosphere they're within about 2K of the standard MLS product. They lead to artifacts in the presence of large line of sight temperature gradients, as I was just mentioning, in the polar regions. Again, because everything becomes so nonlinear down at the lower levels, we need work to improve the lower stratosphere, upper troposphere. What are our pressures? A lot of us, me in particular, are interested in the upper stratosphere and the lower mesosphere. And basically for that region, we could probably do something even without the digital autocorrelator bands. But we would absolutely need to have a version of the polarized forward model to deal with the Zeeman splitting in the ozone line. So that's sort of a research topic for a little bit longer term project. I'm going to shift gears here a little bit. I'm not going to spend any time on this slide. This is just describing the computing facilities that we use. Basically, there's our research facility that the group uses for development, and our what we call the SIPS, which is the sort of operational processing system. And in this processing system, we have three large clusters on which we process one incoming data stream and two reprocessing data streams. And so these are the facilities that we'd be using to do the NRT retrievals. A big thing we have to change is actually how we get the data, because right now, and I'm just going to concentrate on this point, is subdivide the orbit contacts. The satellite basically downlinks the data every 100 minutes. And for the near real-time retrievals, what we're going to do is divide those into files of about 15 minutes each and have those delivered to us in those quanta. So every 100 minutes or so, we'll get a bunch of sets of 15 minutes worth of data, which we'll process in chunks of that size. Currently, what we get is they just save up all these 100 minutes worth of data until we have a day's worth, and then they give them to us. And as I mentioned before, just briefly, we need to use a predicted ephemeris and orbit attitude data, because we don't get that definitive data for a couple of days. And the climatology for a priori. Other modifications. We're only using a few bands for these retrievals, so we only calibrate the radiances from those bands. That's very obvious. And we adjust the data in the 15-minute chunks as described on the previous slides. What we're planning to do, and we're in the midst of writing a proposal to get some more funding to continue this development work, this is just what we would do to to go from level 1 to level 2, and it's fairly obvious. But this point is that instead of using a linearized forward model, we want to go to a second order forward model to improve, again, improve, get a little more nonlinear, improve those lower levels. So this is just describing that, going from a first-order linear scheme where we tabulate the first derivatives to going to a second-order scheme where we tabulate the second derivatives. It's relatively cost and little cost in terms of execution time, but the kicker, of course, is simple conceptually, but requires significant coding changes and testing, meaning it requires time for development and to find out what happens when you do it in the real world. I'm not going to go into that, but just one point. This is just hardware requirements and processing times. Basically, the bottom line is the measurement time to ingestion by the processor would be about 2 hours, and then it takes about 13 minutes to process it. So we would get a chunk of a retrieval, a piece of a day's retrieval, every 2 hours, and we could be doing several of those in parallel because these are the 15-minute chunks. Okay, so this is just about at the end here. This is the schedule for the project once we sort of really get started and hopefully get additional funding for it to carry it out. So the sort of 6 months of algorithm testing and validation, 6 months to create and test the configuration for the ozone retrieval, which includes producing a month's test data set, validate and deliver. I'll go to what deliver means in a second. Do some assessment of various assessments of the quality for control products, and then later on provide a full year of test data. And this last step here, actually, package and release an end-to-end NRT processor. This is our ultimate goal. That is we actually have something where we can operationally process and deliver the data in NRT. The first thing we're doing is ozone, so it's the next point is just repeat the sort of process for temperature and humidity retrievals. Now, the point I just want to make on deliver, for these test data sets, deliver means basically that any of you who's interested in doing testing and so forth with these test data sets, access can be arranged. And we want to see people use these data sets and help us test them, and we want to have the assimilators telling us what they need from these data sets, what ancillary things they need in these data sets. Package and release an end-to-end NRT processor operationally, of course, involve things like export control regulation issues and so forth. But that's a ways down in the future. So basically, that's it. I will leave you to read the summary slide and leave a moment or two for a couple of questions, which I probably can't answer.